Thanks, Cheryl. Nice to be back. And as always, I would love to hear your questions, your concerns. This is Satsang means gathering for the truth. And so it's really about the truth and your experience of the truth. You are the truth, so your experience is part of the truth. So if you have a specific question, a concern, one of those, I also invite questions that you were like too embarrassed to ever ask before in any other spiritual gathering. It doesn't matter if it's a good question or a not so good question. Cheryl wants to share an update on her situation with Sarah, which we spoke about, I think, two satsangs ago. So do you want to take the mic? Oh, someone also raised their hand, I see. So let's start with Cheryl, and then I see that KJ Smith. Oh no, okay. Cheryl says go ahead. So I'm going to let go of the mic, and Kathy, you can ask your question. Maybe in the meantime, Cheryl, you could start typing your question or. Or Kathy, you can take the mic now. We saw that you raised your hand. Maybe you didn't raise your hand on purpose, but if not, just let us know. We'll go on to Cheryl's question. That's great. Nice to hear. I often talk about choiceless choices, where it's just, as you said, so clear, so obvious. It just comes out of the flow, and that sounds like it's a choiceless choice for you to be there now. And if you keep going with the choiceless choices, it all somehow works out, though often the path is more convoluted than we would have chosen if we were trying to choose. But it still somehow has there's a deeper wisdom, a deeper intelligence that knows. And that's the really good sign, is that sense of clarity, that sense of surrender. That's just how it feels when you're on the right path. So nice, again, nice to hear. So I also I see I guess it's Kathy typed in her question. She said, "You gave a description of the word soul a couple of weeks or so ago. I'm wondering if you could revisit that definition for me." Yeah, it's a very simple definition. That's why I like it so much. It's not abstract. It's very practical, specific. And the definition is that the soul is the sum total of all of your experiences. And that could be all of your experiences in this life and all of your experiences before this life. And ultimately, of course, all your experiences after this life. So your soul is like this uniqueness, this individuality that has the unique experiences that you have. And yet, the wonderful thing about that definition is that there's no mistakes, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing that doesn't belong here. Everything adds to your soul. The beautiful experiences, the pleasant experiences, the confusing experiences, the outright painful or tragic experiences. And the profound and transformative realizations and awakenings that occur, they all add richness to your soul. And so I see Kathy typed in, "What about collective experiences?" Well, ultimately, one way you could express it is that there's really ultimately only one soul. And so each apparently individual soul collects their own experiences, has their own unique path through life, and yet they're all part of this one being, this oneness. And so there's nothing that damages or harms or ultimately limits or restricts our being. Everything is an expression of its ultimate freedom. And you know, to be fair, there are experiences that one way to put it is they don't add much to your soul. Some experiences are very contracted, very limited. The experience itself is limited. The soul, the being, is not limited. But it still is an experience. And so it's not, this isn't saying that all experience is equally rich or equally valid or equally true. It's just saying that they all are added to the soul. You could think of the soul as this like incredible hoarder. It's a hoarder of experiences. And so it just keeps adding on to the barn and the attic and the garage and putting more stuff in there. And it's because it is enriched by every experience. And as part of that enrichment, it does become more discriminating about experience. And it knows which experiences, if you, anything you become a collector of, if you became a collector of coins or stamps or baseball cards or whatever it is, antiques, as you become a collector, you naturally become more discriminating. You start to distinguish more what are the especially worthwhile experiences, or in the case of coins, especially worthwhile coins to add to your collection. But there's also, anybody who's really fanatical about any kind of collecting would, they wouldn't turn down a coin just because it wasn't extremely rare or extremely special. And so our soul is kind of like that. It is open to all experiences. It's enriched by all experiences. And as part of that journey, as part of that, the nature of the soul is that it over time becomes more discriminating. And it starts to, in the same way we were just speaking about, it starts to make these kind of choiceless choices that bring it even richer experiences, even greater opportunities for growth and connection and joy and peace and love. And sometimes even after you become very discriminating about what is true and what is important in life, what really matters, you still are going to encounter experiences that are not so true, not so important, not so rich or meaningful for you. And again, in discriminating, you'll notice that. You'll just see, oh yeah, that's, it's just not that rich to watch a violent show on TV. It's like there's a certain, if you've never seen or never experienced that before, it can be a unique experience. It can again add to your soul. But at a certain point, it just may not have that much draw for you because there are richer, more beautiful, more nourishing experiences out there waiting for you. So without it being really a matter of rejection, because it's also always possible that some, again, not so true, not so meaningful, not so rich experience will just show up. Everybody has moments of, I don't know, like opening up your email and finding out that you have 87 spams in your email. And that's, it's just generally not a super rich, nourishing, exciting experience to have all these emails, and often they're in another language even, they're in Russian or Chinese or something. And hey, it happens. And if this discrimination has developed, then you just notice, you realize it's not that important. And yet you still probably have to go through and select them all and delete all those spams. So it's not that you become immune to more contracted experiences, more difficult experiences, but in in as the soul gets more wise, really, more discriminating, and then it just naturally becomes more discriminating in that way. No special effort. Again, the choices become sort of choiceless as you become more discriminating. I like that. Cheryl said, "Well, weekly satsang within Himalaya." That's good too. Satsang. We'll go sit in the sand. I would love to be sitting in the sand on the beach right now. That would be sweet. But it's satsang, as she corrected it. So, Kathy said, "Thanks so much." So I'm assuming that kind of suggests that was a good revisit of that definition of the word soul. And if I do, I actually got a question in the email, so maybe I'll jump into that, and it kind of actually expands on a little bit of what I was just saying. This is from someone who generally can't be here live, but listens to all the recordings. So she says that earlier on I had answered a question for her related to moving from the head to the heart, and referred her to the book Living from the Heart, which, by the way, anyone can download for free from endless-satsang.com. There's a tab at the top that says free ebooks, and the first book is Living from the Heart, and it talks a lot about different approaches to the heart. And she talks about that she initially felt a really profound heart connection and expansion with the techniques discussed in the book. And then she says, "I'm still finding them helpful, but feel like I am having trouble holding on to the connection to the heart." She says, "You mentioned that one definition of truth is that whatever opens your heart and quiets your mind." And then it's nice, she says, "Listening to your teachings or reading your writings meets that definition of truth for me." And then she says, "Do you have any advice on how best to maintain a strong connection to the heart?" And so this is a really great question. I think in order to make the distinction that I'm going to, I just need to quickly explain a little bit what the book says about this definition of truth, saying that the truth is what opens your heart and quiets your mind. That's just the experiential definition. And something that is less true, it has the opposite effect. It causes a contraction, a tightening in your heart, or you could call it in your sense of self, in your sense of me. Anytime your sense of self feels very small, very contracted, and your mind actually gets busy. In fact, your mind gets busy to try to compensate. If something's not very true, the mind gets busy to try to fill in the blanks, to fill in the truth. So when that happens, it just means that something you were considering, thinking, listening to, experiencing in that moment was not a very complete or large truth. Now it's tricky because, and this is where I'm kind of going on to answer her question about how to maintain a strong connection to the heart. It gets tricky because all there is truth. And so even when you experience a small truth, it still has some truth to it. Some truths are so small they're actually extremely painful, extremely difficult. And almost even tragic, truths that get so overgeneralized that they become, very, very small truths that become something like well, this is kind of appropriate to today, that they become kind of racist in their perspective. They overgeneralize something that's true about some individuals to be true about all individuals of the same skin color or religion or something like that. And so it's a very, very small truth, tragically small, especially the actions that come out of holding a small truth like that can be tragic. And yet there's some truth. It's sometimes again, a ridiculously small amount of truth. But since all there is truth, that's all we have to work with. That's all the mind has, the consciousness can be aware of is something, is some truth. And so this sense of contraction and the sense of the mind getting busy, the sense of yourself, your me getting very small, is what lets you know that it's not a very complete truth. And as I was just kind of saying, it's not up to you always what, even when your heart has become very discriminating, when your soul has become very discriminating, it's not really up to you how what size of truth shows up next in your experience. I use the example of the 87 spams that showing up in your e-box, in your email inbox. And that's, it's just not a profound truth. It's not a meaningful thing. It's not important. It's not very useful or helpful or relevant to most people's life. And it just means you have to spend a few minutes clicking on them and deleting them. And so life is like that. It shows up in all different forms, in all different experiences, some of which have this effect of opening your heart and quieting your mind. I said it's your heart or your sense of self that expands. And as your sense of self, as the sense of me, as you start experiencing actually very large truths, very profound truths, then the sense of me gets very, very expanded. And it can even expand way beyond what we would normally even call me. It's like it no longer makes sense to call it me when the sense of self, when the sense of what was me, that sense of your own self becomes infinite and eternal and includes everybody and everything. Or even if it just expands to, kind of softens and opens up and just takes in the whole room and you're with good friends and you just feel connected with everybody there. There's an opening in that sense of self that includes everybody else who's present. And so it doesn't, when you're with a group of friends, it doesn't make sense and you feel one with them, it doesn't really make sense to call that me. So at the extreme end of this experience, this discriminating quality of our heart of sensing how true things are, it takes us right out of the sense of me. That's just the way a very profound truth is felt. It dissolves the sense of me. And then in the other extreme, when it gets very contracted, it not only seems like a me, but it seems like a small, limited, sometimes painfully contracted sense of self. I used to joke about how, sometimes instead of just getting in touch with my inner child, I would be getting in touch with my inner amoeba, because that's how small my sense of self seemed in that moment. Very, very contracted. So the question that this woman shared is, she said, "Do you have any advice on how best to maintain a strong connection to the heart?" And she said earlier that she's having trouble holding on to the connection to the heart. And so my sense is that there's a very subtle and yet pervasive misunderstanding here that is very common in spiritual circles. And it's the misunderstanding that you are only connected to your heart, that you are only in touch with your being in those moments of expansion, in those moments where the sense of me actually dissolves or at least gets very, very open, very spacious. And that somehow, if the opposite happens, that that's somehow a problem. And that there's something wrong. It's like, oops, oh shoot, I lost it. I was feeling so free, so enlightened, so awake, and now I'm feeling all contracted again. I'm totally wrapped up in my problems, my identity. And there's a sense there that maybe you've lost your connection to the heart, to being. And what I would like to suggest is that the contraction itself is your connection to this discriminating wisdom that your soul has accumulated. That it's the fact that you feel contracted is the right way to feel. When some old piece of conditioning is being stirred up, when someone is expressing their conditioning and being unkind or hypercritical or just expressing some perspective that is not very true. Again, it could even be tragically not very true, horrifically not very true, and that it's the right way for those experiences to feel, for them to feel contracted. That is your connection to this deeper wisdom, this deeper sense of being. And that the real invitation is to learn to trust that. That when there is a contraction, you welcome it, trust it, and become curious. What's here that's limiting my experience? What old piece of conditioning is being triggered? And if it's happening consistently, it's worth exploring. It's worth inquiring into. But I want to come back to this idea that the sense of me can dissolve when it gets very expanded. So this contracted sense of me, one of the really striking things you can discover is that this contracted sense of me that that many people have through much of their life, that gets very familiar. That sense of identity that we all experience to some degree or another, that has nothing to do with you. What is getting contracted is your sense of yourself. It's not actually yourself. And so when you feel contracted, it's not, even though it's you that feels small, it's not about you. And that's the thing that's sometimes a little hard to get. I could use the metaphor if you lived in an amazing 1,000 room mansion. You could still go into a small walk-in closet and shut the door and experience that one tiny room in this 1,000 room mansion. And while you were doing that, the 1,000 room mansion would still be there. Even if you plug your ears and close your eyes and go na 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 na, it's like the mansion doesn't actually go away. The mansion exists. Your experience of the mansion has gotten very, very small. You're sitting in a dark corner inside a closet. And that is a closet. The right way for a small closet to feel, a small dark closet, is to feel small and dark. That's the right discrimination of the closet. But it doesn't mean anything about the actual mansion. And so the same thing, when our sense of ourself gets very, very small and very contracted, it's not really telling us anything about ourself. It's just the place in our experience that reflects how true the experience is. It's like if you got out a ruler and measured the closet, a tape measure, and measured the closet. That's, the right, whatever measurements you came up with, that would be the right measurements for that closet. The challenge in discriminating the truth is that what gets small, what feels small, is this sense of self. And so we think that there's something wrong, there's something lacking or missing, or as in the case of this question I received, we have a sense that we've lost contact or connection to the heart. And yet again, it's the correct way for it to feel. It's showing you how small the idea is, how small the fear is, how small the desire is, how small. These are like the equivalent of the closet. It's something, there's something that's shaping and or limiting your experience, and your sense of self it appears to get really small. It's almost like it gets small enough to fit into that fearful thought. And fearful thoughts are actually really, really small. So the sense of self has to get very, very small to experience a fearful thought. So if you really get this, that your sense of self, unless there's no sense of self, when there's no sense of self and there just is being, there just is what is, then there's no filter, there's no veil over your actual true nature. And so in that case, it's, you could say, accurate. It's a sense of no self, really. It's an accurate sense of no self, because there's no filter, there's no veil, there's nothing giving it a shape or a form or a limitation. But anytime there is a sense of self, it is not actually telling you how big you are, how limitless and eternal you are. It's telling you how big or how limited a thought is, a belief, an emotion, a desire. And so, someone typed in, can you relate Maslow's self-actualization to what you are saying? Boy, I'm not a super expert on that, so it may come as I speak, how that might relate. There's the other thing I'll just keep going here. The other thing I was gonna point to is that when in our process we start to experience more expanded states, it's just part of the soul's evolution. Like I said, it becomes more discriminating. It starts to acknowledge and recognize and even be attracted to, a slight preference for these truer experiences, these richer, realer, and ultimately even the truly profound experiences that one can have in a spiritual awakening or realization. And this maybe is where it would relate to Maslow, is that when you reach those higher levels in Maslow's system, and it's always relative, but as you reach one of those levels, your sense of self gets more and more expanded. And at first, that feels wonderful. It's such a relief. I mean, it's a weak metaphor, but it's like you've been wearing those tight, uncomfortable shoes all day at work and on the train home, and you finally get home and you take off your shoes and oh, your feet, oh, you wiggle your toes. It feels so good to take off that limitation, that tightness. And that is that's the that's natural, that's normal. It's like anyone who has a spiritual experience, even a full-blown awakening, they are blown away by how wonderful it feels in contrast to feel that sense of limitation, that sense of a tight, limited me start to some degree fall away, open up into a more connected sense, a more open sense. And so I bought those tattoos to begin with. That's a good question. Again, that's where the soul becomes more discriminating. And after a while, you don't care anymore. You just wear your comfy old sneakers to work. That's a great metaphor, great expansion of the metaphor. And so I just want to say again, when you first discover this capacity for this expansion and for this relative dissolving of the sense of me and maybe ultimate dissolving of the sense of me, that there naturally arises a preference for that, a desire for that. And as I spoke earlier, life still exists on all these different levels, and other people are still operating on all these different levels. And there are almost always still layers of conditioning inside of you that still get triggered, even after different degrees of awakening. There will still be different amounts of conditioning. It's all individual, it's all unique, but usually there still is plenty of conditioning that appears, gets triggered, and so then there's another sense of contraction. And it's a very, very subtle kind of suffering that arises often where people get very attached to that sense of expansion. The funny thing is that the expansion itself is, like every other experience, is temporary. Going back to my silly metaphor, when you take, you wear its shoes all day and then you take them off and it feels great for a little while. And then, like, your feet expand back to their normal size, and you can't, like, peel off the skin and feel your feet expand even more. It's like you've reached a certain degree of comfort in your feet, and that's as far as it will go. That wonderful sense of taking the shoes off is a temporary experience, and the same thing with a true and authentic spiritual realization or awakening. There often is this huge sense of relief at first, and that's what it's easy to become attached to, is the pleasure in it, the kind of almost blissful quality of that. And yet, if that sense of expansion just kind of remains, even if there is nothing interrupting it, the sense of relief, the sense of pleasure in that, the sense of this joy of discovering something, a new possibility, that naturally subsides because it becomes the new normal. And so trying to keep that freshness of expansion, the only way to actually be, to experience another wonderful experience of expansion is to first contract. And I think our essence, our being, figured this all out a long, long time ago. And so it never quite gives up the capacity to contract. It never gives up this option, this ability to go into a relative degree of contraction. That also is temporary. It's interesting to also discover how all the contractions are just in the moment. They all fade very quickly, especially if you stop focusing on them. They can dissolve very quickly. I'll share this. This morning, I woke up, and I don't know whether it was like the residue of a dream, but there was this very unusual for me, this very strong sense of contraction, this almost sense of, like you could call it depression, you could call it this like real heavy weight in my chest, and it just appeared. And there were, it seemed to trigger thoughts of kind of regret about the past and longing for the future. And And here's where it gets really interesting. And at a certain level, there was this deeper knowing that the sense of self that gave me, the sense of being like, oh, woe is me, was seen to not be real. There was like a deeper knowing that, hey, this is whatever this is, it's showing up and it doesn't really have anything to do with me. Again, that sense of contraction is not showing you anything about yourself. And so I had this like real clear sense that, huh, this is interesting. There's all this contraction, but it's not mine. It really was more like something like the 87 spam emails, or I don't know, like realizing that the windstorm last night blew a bunch of leaves all over the front walk and patio, and it's like, oh yeah, there's something there. I can't just spiritually transcend the existence of the leaves. And that might relate to someone typing about Maslow, that the lower level veils still need to be satisfied. Yeah, the smaller truths still operate. They still exist. And so you still have to delete the emails. You still have to clean up the leaves if you want a clean patio. And this morning, I still had to spend a little time just being with that sense of contraction until, interestingly, until it just was, again, there was this full recognition that it wasn't about me. It was just something that was showing up from, the collective consciousness, some old piece of conditioning, maybe some old experiences that had left a residue. And it just, when it wasn't that important anymore, I just got out of bed and started my day. And just as I said about the expansions earlier don't last, in a few minutes I couldn't find it anymore. If I checked back, there was none of those sensations of the tight shoes. My feet, my soul, my essence had just expanded back out to a more free, open, spacious range of experience. And so a big part of this is the recognition that what you are, again, what you are is not harmed by these contractions. What you are is not added to by an awakening, by a profound expansion, even by a wonderful experience that on a more relative level opens your heart. What you are is not actually added to when you fall in love. And what you are is not actually harmed when your love affair ends in a painful fashion. The expansion, the sensations, the experiences all do appear, and they are again all added to your soul. They all become part of the richness of your soul, even the contracting ones. But none of them either harm or benefit your being. And it's all an illusion. The sense of me, a me that was either, oh, even the sense of me that arises after an awakening, where is very commonly after the first blush of pure, spacious presence and awareness. At some point, there's something, some little sense of me that comes back in that says, oh, I'm enlightened. I'm awake. I'm special. I'm somebody now. I made it into the awakened club, and I should be treated with, like royalty now because I am so awake. And that little sense of me, if you really feel into it, will not actually feel so expanded. An awakened me is as much of a burden, really, or as much of a contraction as an unawakened me. It's still a thought. It's still a veil, an image, an idea. and does not really contain the truth. The truth is this simple, endless what is. Just what is appearing in the now. And so, even after a full awakening, there's no question that there will be moments where a smaller truth is experienced. What does, and this is just in my own experience, what does change is kind of what I was describing about my experience this morning, is that you don't really take it seriously. When a small truth shows up, it's kind of like, again, it's like all these spam showing up in your email. You don't take it that seriously. It's like you don't, ideally, if there's perspective on it, it doesn't ruin your day, or you don't, throw yourself off a bridge because you got so many spam emails that day. There's perspective, there's a sense, oh yeah, it's just that thing that happens, every now and then. And when it keeps happening, you get a new email address. You do something about it. You still have to deal with it. You still have to sweep up the leaves. You still have to, I still had to take a moment and just really, really welcome that sense of heaviness to remember that it wasn't mine. It wasn't actually about me. Because the me, no matter how inadequate or unworthy the sense of me is, or how spiritual and expanded the sense of me is, that sense of me is an illusion, is a trick of the mind. And so it's a tricky, interesting illusion, but it's not real. It doesn't have the qualities of truth. It causes more a sense of contraction and a busyness of the mind. Yeah, someone typed in about how we all want to experience the wondrous love source place that we all want to experience in our lives here on Earth. And that is, just like the small truths are still exist, the big truths are still the big truths. And anytime they arise, anytime that is your experience, anytime, it's really more that the veils, the thoughts, the limitations, for a moment fall away. The mind for a moment falls silent, and the sense of self expands, and you experience the limitless love, the limitless joy of being itself. And those, I don't want anything I'm saying to suggest that we don't value those experiences or don't welcome those experiences. And here's another thing. This is what I think trips people up a lot, is that when you are in this place of total welcoming, those kind of expanded, spacious, profound experiences show up more often. Again, it's like a natural evolution of the soul. It becomes more discriminating. It becomes more skillful, you could almost say. Our consciousness, even our mind gets a little more skillful at kind of quickly seeing through the illusions, quickly letting go of the identities that arise, or the old conditioning. Not taking too seriously the feelings. And the net result of all that is that there is more experiences of expansion, more experiences of openness, spaciousness, of no me, and more experiences of spontaneity, authenticity. All those things just are what's left when there's not a lot of a lot covering up our true nature. And again, this is where it gets very subtle. If you get attached to that, if you focus on hanging on to it, going back to my metaphor of living in a 1,000-room mansion, If you if, imagine if you tried to take full advantage of all 1,000 rooms every day as much as possible, you would start racing around like a madman, going from room to room, and like sat down and said, "Oh yeah, this is a great room too." And then you run into the next room, "Oh yeah, the media room," and you watch like 2 minutes of a movie, and then you go into the kitchen, "Oh, this is such a great kitchen. In fact, it's one of 14 kitchens I have in my 1,000 room." And, oh, and so you race over to the next kitchen and the next kitchen, and then you know, it's like, whoa, you know, it's like the mansion is here. Mansion is the mansion. Your being, at a certain point, there's this quieter kind of just relaxation that recognizes that what you are is what you are, and that all the contractions, all the fearful thoughts, all the regrets and longings and desires and all the identities that those give you, they're just rooms in the mansion. You don't have to either get rid of them or get attached to them. You can just relax and allow life to unfold in whatever way it's going to unfold. Allow the spam emails to show up when they show up. Allow the leaves to get blown onto the patio when they get blown on the patio. Allow profound, blissful experiences of true nature and expansion beyond what you ever imagined was possible. Allow those when they come. And yet, I guess the best word really is trust. When you start recognizing that all of these experiences add to your soul, that none of them can harm your soul, then you can just allow whichever one is showing up next. There's no particular need to chase after spiritual experience, no particular need to avoid it or deny it when it arises naturally. But if you wake up depressed, you just experience that, explore that. Not in a, it doesn't have to become a big project or anything, because there's nothing here that needs to be fixed, nothing that needs to be gotten rid of. And like I said, the paradox is that when that's your attitude, you tend to just. There's a natural, you can almost think of it like a gravitational pull towards expanded states within our being. There's a natural sense in which our being opens. Actually the default. That's the effortless movement. Just like, falling onto your bed. That's an effortless movement thanks to gravity. It's getting out of bed that requires the effort. And so falling into your true nature is effortless. And so when you struggle less, you just naturally fall a lot more into the now, into presence, into being. And yeah, those old patterns, those old things, and sometimes even life, in a sense, really does require a certain amount of effort. Deleting the emails or being with the depression or sweeping up the leaves. That's just a very temporary, you could say sense of identity. For a moment there has to be a sense of me that is sweeping, to even if it's just to a very slight degree, in order to get the leaves. But it can then you can then just fall back into the now. And so, because there's this natural tendency for there to be more of these experiences, there can arise this expectation that that's the measure, that that there's a problem if the other thing happens, if the contraction happens, if identity arises again. And that's again where that sense of trust can be so free. so that all is welcome, all, even contracted senses of yourself, even old layers of conditioning, they all come when they come. And it just, to me, the biggest freedom is when it doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter whether you wake up feeling happy or you wake up feeling depressed. And when it truly doesn't matter, again, then you tend to spend more time in those expanded states, but it still doesn't matter. If it starts to matter, then you have a problem again. As soon as it matters how expanded you feel, as soon as you're no longer just trusting the sense of self that you have in this moment, and you're trying to have a sense of self that is more expanded, or trying to hang on to a sense of self that's more expanded, that will contract you. It's wonderful. It's paradoxical. Trying to be expanded contracts you, and allowing yourself to be contracted expands you. Somehow it seems totally backwards, but that's the way it works. And, you know, there can even start to be a recognition that all of it is the spontaneous unfolding of this divine intelligence. That there actually is an intelligence behind all of our conditioning. As I said, all there is truth. And there may be actually a good reason why a feeling of depression arises in that moment. Some actual rich, surprising opportunity that life is presenting by bringing up that old layer of conditioning to be, you know, it's part of the truth. It doesn't need to be gotten rid of. It just needs to be seen actual size, to be seen for what it really is. And then it naturally takes its place. Again, this is kind of a weak metaphor, but you know, if you have a whole box of tools and half of them you inherited from your parents or something, and you come across this tool at the bottom of the toolbox and you don't even know what it does. It's like you've never seen a tool like that. It has all these little funny prongs and a wheel and like a handle that you squeeze, and you know, finally somebody shows you that it's like a hole punch for making holes in leather, you know. Well, you know, who knows when you might need to make a hole in leather, so you throw it back in the bottom of the toolbox. And it's like now it's fine. It's perfectly fine for it to take up residence in your toolbox because you know it. You've discriminated it. You've distinguished how true it is, how useful it is, how relevant it is in each and every moment. And so when your conditioning is all seen that way, all known to that depth, then it doesn't have to really go away. You never want to lose the capacity of your mind to form a thought. That as if that was even possible. And so, again, the biggest freedom is when it doesn't matter anymore how expanded, contracted, how blissful or ordinary, how busy or quiet your mind is. You know those experiences, you know where they fit in the realm of, in the various situations and experiences of life. They have their place. The ones that don't matter very much don't matter very much. The things that matter a lot, like peace and joy and love, just matter a lot. And you also discriminate that. Someone said that they're learning that in a gentle way in the here and now of my life. Yeah, that's how it happens, actually. It's like everything just comes in more and more into perspective. And also, naturally, there are tools in your toolbox that are extremely useful. You know, something like a pencil or a pen, you use it a lot. Or a computer, It has all these amazing capacities, and it still is limited. If only a computer could prepare your lunch, that would be I would buy that computer in a heartbeat if it could just do the shopping and prepare all the meals. And maybe someday there will be a robot that'll do all that for me. But I still, even something as profoundly useful and capable as a computer still has its limitations. I still don't expect it to fix lunch. And then there is this ultimate reality, which is so profoundly big that we can't even conceive it, we can't even speak it. And that's also here. That's also, in fact, it's always here. And that's part of what gives you that sense of it doesn't matter, as you start to experience that depth, that breadth of your being, and you know it's always here. It's like the 1,000 rooms in the mansion. You don't have to race around and experience them all today. You can just know they're here. You can just know that what you are is always here. And then it doesn't matter anymore whether you're experiencing it or not. All right. As always, it seems like a perfect time to stop when it's time to stop. I wonder how that works. So, as always, it's been a pleasure. There's my email address again. It was nice to get an email this week with a question. That's a wonderful way to get your question answered in satsang. So, you all be well, and I'll talk to you again next week.